frappe de Jonathan Sexton.
Oh, il s'en fout tant,
il passe, c'est terrible, terrible. Il est là, Jonathan Sexton.
Oh, we're looking for another one. It's Canning once again, firing it in from near the sideline. It's a miracle shot. It's gone over the bar.
This is beyond cruelty. This is sadism at its worst. This... It is beyond belief that a team that gives so much that those fellas give today are on the wrong side of that result.
Inviting is there! Robbie Brady brings us all to our feet in Lille.
Welcome, welcome to a bold new world here on Balls.ie. This is The Build-Up with Ladbrokes, our new weekly podcast that previews the best sporting action for the weekend ahead. My name is Mark Farley, and each week I'll be joined by a host of regular contributors from the Balls.ie office and beyond. Today we'll be chatting to former Irish international Stephen Ferris ahead of Ireland's opening World Cup warm-up game against Italy on Saturday. We'll also be previewing the All-Ireland football semi-finals with Maurice Brosnan, and of course looking forward to the opening weekend of the Premier League. But first of all, allow me to introduce my trusty steed, my constant guide and moral compass, the artist formerly known as Angry Producer Mick. It's slightly mellowed producer Mick.
How are you, Mark?
What's the crack?
I'm good. That was quite excited. The intro you get me, never mind everybody else here, yeah. Yeah. I'm super excited about this. There's one thing is that, like, you mentioned guests, regular guests from beyond with Stephen Ferris. That's pretty good. We're talking to him today. Ireland World Cup warm-up games. The rugby has a tendency in the summer to disappear a little bit. It doesn't have as much constant news as football does, so it doesn't stay as much in the public eye, I suppose. But what's happened behind the scenes is Ireland have been gathering in various different camps and around the country, building for a World Cup. And I don't think that's going to hit home with a lot of people until we see Ireland actually line out against Italy this week. And you're like, God, in a month's time or in a month and a half, 2 months' time, we're actually playing a World Cup in which, you know, technically, according to Ladbrokes, 6-1, Ireland have a chance of winning. So, you know, we're not gonna go down that particular route because we'll get too scared. We don't like hype in this country. But I'm really looking forward to talking to Stephen because it's like we need to get our head focused back into just how big rugby is going to become all of a sudden again in the next couple of weeks.
Exactly. It's a really exciting time for sports lovers because you've got the rugby, as we've mentioned. You've got the Premier League starting back this weekend. You also have the All-Ireland football semi-finals. And any listeners to the three-man weave will realise that we need a third man right now. We've got myself and yourself, but Maurice Brosnan, the host of the Three Man Weave podcast, will be in later on to give us a couple of value bets that he thinks could happen over the weekend when Dublin take on the what would you call them? The undefeatable Mayo.
Oh,
until the face.
I was going to say the dirt on your shoe that you just can't get rid of. You know, no matter what sticks or forks you use, you just can't shake them off.
Exactly.
That's Mayo to Dublin. Yeah.
And Tyrone Kerry, which could be low key one of the best All Ireland semi-finals in recent memory. I think all the attention's been placed on Dublin and Mayo for the last few days, but that one is going to be an absolute cracker on Sunday. So Maurice is going to be in later on to chat briefly about those games. We'll also be playing a couple of new segments. We have one is called Get Hyped, where Mick, you are tasked this week of coming up with some random sporting event that we don't know about that we really should be paying attention to. And you're going to explain why this is one of the most important things happening over the weekend.
Yeah, well, I don't know about one of the most important, but we'll give it a go.
That's your task. You're giving it a go.
Yeah.
I also have been tasked with the big shout, which is we're going to pick something every week that's crazy odds, and we have to try and explain our reason why we think it's actually going to happen, which is even a tougher task, I would suggest.
We're going to have this a go. I think it needs to be very, very long shot. But somebody's going to get one right at the end of the season and, like, you know, or between now and the end of this year. What's going to happen when it happens? I don't know. I think we need some sort of big prize for the person that comes up with it. Or maybe people can send in their big shouts and we'll have a prize for them if they get one right.
Exactly. We'll also be playing Ladbrokes 1-2 Free, which is a free game that you can play on Ladbrokes' website every single week. They pick out three fixtures from the weekend's football action. You have to get all three scores correctly predicted. If you get all three, you win €100. If you get one right, you get a euro free bet. If you get two right, you get €5 free bet. So we're going to have a little bit of a league table among the two of us where we go each week. We'll make our predictions and see who can get the closest.
Yeah, and I'm going to beat you. And also, that is free to play, as the name might suggest, 1-2-free. And really easy to do. And I, like, made my picks on, like, Tuesday morning this week on the app. And I'm, oh, God, I really should have held off on that and thought about it a little bit more. So it's in many ways it's too easy to play back.
Yeah, I'm biding my time. I'm going to make up my mind on this show right live and in living color.
Oh yeah, I don't remember what those picks were, so they might be different than today's ones.
But first of all, Mick, the Premier League,
it's back, baby.
It's back, baby, and you are an Aston Villa fan who is more excited than ever for the return of top flight football.
Everybody is sick of me around this office, not least yourself, because I am so bullish about the return of Aston Villa to the Premier League. I don't mind that we've made 12 signings. I think that that's a good thing. They've all been smart. I trust our system. I trust our new owners, our new CEO, our new manager. Villa are exciting for the first time in maybe the Martin O'Neill era of the mid-2000s, 2006, 2007. First time Villa have been exciting team and exciting club since then. Everything is looking up. We're not going down, I'm telling you that much. And I've never been as excited about a Premier League season. There's nothing like being away for 3 years to make you realise what you missed.
But like, how can you make any prediction for Aston Villa at this time of the year? I know every fan of a club are going to be like, oh, this is going to be our year or whatever. But you've literally never seen this Aston Villa team. It's a completely different team to the team that got promoted. They've made 12 signings. We were going through earlier on, you're probably looking at a max of 4, maybe 5 of Aston Villa's players from last year actually starting in the first day of the season. How are they going to gel? Are they, like, look at Fulham last year, spent a lot, ended up getting relegated. Aston Villa are 4-1.
Oh, don't do the Fulham thing. That's like the kryptonite to all Aston Villa fans this year. It's like a sound of nails screeching on a blackboard. Is that this kind of general, you know, you're doing a Fulham because Fulham also spent money. Every other team other than Fulham in history who spent money after coming up has stayed up. Fulham were the first ones to spend the 100 million and go down. But I don't know. I've been following it in a lot of detail, more so than I ever would have before. I just, you know, there's a lot out there now, social media, whatever. And I've been following the chase for all of the players that they've got. I'm convinced that they're all the perfect fit for the club, whether they are or not. Obviously, one or two are going to be misses, but that's why they bought so much. That's why they spent so much. And I genuinely, all joking aside, do actually trust the system that Dean Smith wants to play and that he's chosen players that fit perfectly into that. Don't forget as well, they've signed 12 players. 3 of them were players that were on loan last season that helped them get promoted. So that's almost cut that down to 9. Yeah. Then they also lost 2 of Villa's best players last year, which was Tammy Abraham and Axel Tuanzebe, who've both gone back to their clubs, Chelsea and Manchester United, because of how well they did with Villa. So they had to replace them. So almost, you know, take another 2 out of that again. And then suddenly you're looking at 7 signings. Do you want the promoted team to make 7 signings?
That's a fib.
Why?
Because 2 new signings are 2 new signings. You can't say, well, this striker, who have you brought in? You've brought in Wesley.
But I'm saying in terms of building
Wesley's up, Wesley's going to be just a complete exact replacement for Tammy Abraham.
No, but in terms of building up the squad, it's not.
Yeah, but no one's arguing against that. It's just that they have to gel together and play well.
Yeah.
There's
from what I've seen in preseason, and as we all know, preseason is, and as we'll talk to Stephen Ferris about in a while, preseason is sacrosanct. You can't argue with anything you heard, seen in preseason. But I think they look good. And look, a player to watch out for if people aren't familiar, as I know that, like, as I never did before 3 years ago, a lot of people don't watch the Championship. A player, obviously Jack Grealish is going to be Villa's star. A player, if you're not familiar with him, to watch out for Villa this year, and I know we're going to talk about fancy football in a while, John McGinn, Scottish guy, midfield, bought for 2 million off Hibs last year because Celtic didn't want him. Or Celtic wouldn't pay the 2 million, which will probably, I think, go down as one of the worst decisions in Celtic Football Club history. And the reason they'll probably be glad to be rid of Brendan Rodgers.
Aston Villa have finished, I'm going to give you a little stat here, Mick. They've finished 6th in the Premier League more times than any other team in Premier League history.
I did know that, actually.
Just looking here at Ladbrokes, they're 50-1 to finish in the top 6 this season. Would you be bold enough?
No.
To make that claim.
I think that is far too high. I think there's a mini league from 7th down that I think that it would not shock me to see Villa finish in the top half, which is 4-1 on Ladbrokes to finish in the top 10. It's worth a small bet. It wouldn't be my main banker of the season or anything. I'd be very happy if they finished 14th and were out of general relegation trouble from early on and then built on that. But there's money to spend there as well in January if needs be. Very, very rich owners, actually. I think that's very underreported. I think they might be the third richest club in the Premier League.
Which you've got financial of the owners. Fair play to contest
you
with
do,
as well.
You do, of course. But look, I don't know. The 4-1 for the top 10, I think top 6 might be a bit too much. I'm not that bullish.
I was just, I was only putting out a feeler there, because if you were going to say that, I was going to possibly have to replace you with some random person walking out the street who may have more of a head on them.
There are other clubs in the Premier League this year, though. 19 of them, I hear.
I was about to say, like, that top six, is it that nailed on? I don't know if this might be the year. You're looking at Aston Villa spending a lot and buying a lot of players. There's teams in the last couple of, in the last 24, 48 hours, we're recording this on a Wednesday, the transfer window is going to close tomorrow. Who knows what's going to happen, because there's so many possible deals up in the air. Mm. You're looking at the likes of Everton, Leicester, even Wolves, you know, like, they would probably be fancying their chances at an outside shot at getting into that top six. But there's also, then I suppose, if you look at United, Arsenal, Chelsea, I think almost a little mini league of their own.
Mm. Spurs to be in that as well. They do.
Yeah.
Well, last year they were, so for a finish.
Yeah.
Those four teams were doing their best to not get into the top four between them at the end of last season. It was crazy how many games they all lost. But, right, okay, maybe we say talent-wise, Spurs are probably a notch above. They don't go on another Champions League run to tire them out. But I've got one for you. For a break into the top six. And I think you have it too, because we both asked what price they were earlier without talking to each other about what they were. But what a beautiful thing it would be for football and for irony.
And delusion.
Yeah, so never mind if you're who you're a fan of.
I think I know who
we're
going
here. Neutral here, except for me being a Villa fan. If Leicester City were to sell Harry Maguire to Manchester United for £85 million, and then finish ahead of them in the Premier League, finish in the top six, which is a 4-1 shot. It's tight enough odds, actually, 4-1 for them to finish in the top six. Because as we said, there is a gap there between kind of like Arsenal and United, fifth and sixth, and then Wolves, Everton, Leicester, Watford, probably the next group there. But Leicester could. Leicester have had a really interesting summer. And if they didn't lose Maguire, you'd be like, God, they could get in there. But they'll probably make a signing between now and 5 o'clock tomorrow. Maybe like a Lewis Dunk or someone like that.
Exactly. And it's a case of if this podcast existed a few years ago and we were like, who's going to break in? Is anyone going to be able to break into the top six? You'd all say, go away, lads, these are mad. And then Leicester went on and won the Premier League. So like, it's not that crazy.
Did that actually happen?
It did. I'm fairly sure it did.
It wasn't a dream.
No, I think it did. I'm 99% sure it did. But we tasked ourselves here with making a couple of different predictions. I haven't seen them yet, your predictions yet. But going into the season, we were like, right, who's going to be relegated? Who's going to finish in the top four? Who's going to win player of the year? And who's going to get top goal scorer? So on that basis, we're talking about, I think we could be around the same, singing up the same hymn sheet here, because both of us are talking about United possibly falling out of the top six. Which I would therefore take, Mick, that you do not have them in your top four.
I don't. Do you want my top four?
Yeah, go for it.
City and Liverpool, nailed on.
Yeah.
And then I think Spurs and Chelsea, the exact same as last year. I think that Arsenal are just always too inconsistent. Although, do you know, I've forgotten until I was just watching like one of those Sky Sports Premier League goals year or something. Arsenal went on an unbelievable unbeaten run last year. As they tend to do in the middle of seasons whenever they're out of it early.
Yeah.
It's like nothing has changed since the Wenger era, by the way.
I'm trying to remember, did they lose their first game of the season and then went on
they
the massive
got hammered
run,
to Chelsea, I think.
Yeah, and then went on this crazy unbeaten run.
But obviously it all fell apart in the end. You know, as it turns out, Wenger wasn't the reason that Arsenal are Arsenal. And Emery has done more or less the same thing so far. Be interesting to see how they got on. They haven't had the easiest summer. It worry me that Koscielny wanted out so much. Obviously they've bought him.
He's finished, Bill.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. He was their captain and he just decided enough was enough, which is a worrying thing, I think, for a club. Anyway, I think that there's no evidence that United are going to be any better this year than they were last year, except for the fact that they're Man United and everybody's been watching every single move they've made all preseason and you're clutching at straws hoping for the best. They've got two new players in the back four. Wouldn't surprise me to see Twanzebe breaking into the team, I have to say. And again, that's a very Villa-centric comment, but that would be a massive improvement at the back. But that's not where the real problems are. Like,
yeah, I've gone with Arsenal to get that fourth spot.
Instead of Chelsea.
Instead of Chelsea.
Right.
I just think that I'm actually strangely excited about this Chelsea team. I'm excited, like Lampard, myself and Frank Lampard, me being a Leeds fan, I have a very troubled history with Frank. I've been known to call him a coward at numerous times shouting for him to stop crying. But I weirdly kind of now want him to, I kind of want him to crash and burn as this Chelsea manager, and half want him to really succeed, because I think the transfer ban could be a blessing in disguise for them.
Yeah.
And they've got so many decent young players. Like Mason Mount was brilliant for Lampard last season. Mm-hmm. Kurt Zouma's back now. I don't understand why Everton fans are like hashtag free Kurt Zouma. I think he's going to start for Chelsea and have a big year for them. There's so much, like Pulisic is going to be an exciting lad get in Premier League now. I know they're missing Hazard.
Yeah.
But I think aside from
Pulisic is almost a washout because he's replacing Hazard and he's not going to be as good as him. But I think, you know,
Tammy Abraham
is going to be better than anyone they had up front last year. I'm convinced of it. He's going to be Bashiru and Giroud is who he has to beat out to get that thing. I'm pretty sure he's going to do it. And Hudson-Odoi is going to actually come into the team and be part of the starting lineup, you would imagine, this year once he kind of gets back fully fit. He got Loftus-Cheek there whenever he comes back from injury. I know he played last year, but there is a kind of a sense of a young team there. You know,
Kante possibly back in the central midfield.
Yeah, you wouldn't know. They're talking about Lampard, a new role for Jorginho as well, like letting him off the leash a little bit. So, you know, we almost don't know how good Jorginho is because he played in such a reductive role under Sarri last year, you know. So I'd be interested to see that. And then I think Mount could, you don't know yet, but he could be an upgrade on Barkley as well, you know, and it looks like Barkley's going to start at least at the start of the season.
I like how I said I think Arsenal are going to finish in the top four and then promptly went on to give all the reasons why Chelsea are exciting. But
just one of those blessings in disguise, though, that like sometimes you've got so much bloody talent there. None of them are ever going to get when every summer you panic and buy five, you know, 100 million players. Whereas now it's like, let's actually see what they're doing and have a little bit of excitement and freshness about the team for the first time in years.
But the reason why I'm going with, there's a lot of unknowns there. Like a lot of the players we mentioned there could end up being bit part players, barely featuring at all. Whereas with Arsenal, in all the madness that's going on around them, you've got United. You know, as we're saying, we're recording now, by this time tomorrow, Pogba could be left, Lukaku could have left.
No replacements.
Yeah, exactly, no replacements. They've only just got Harry Maguire in the door. You're looking at Chelsea with the new manager, transfer man, you don't know what's going to happen. These players are exciting, but it could go arse ways. Arsenal have got Emery in on a second season. It took them a while last year to figure out how to blend Aubameyang and Lacazette together, how to play them in the one team. They've got Nicolas Pepe, who is, I think, without a doubt, the most exciting signing to come into Premier League this summer. I know they've got problems at the back, but he's a big fan. Rob Holding, when he comes back, looks like as if he's going to start in central defence. Callum Chambers still exists. It looks like he's going to start at the weekend, which I think is an argument against, maybe, rather than argument for. They're 7-5 to finish in the top four, and I think they're sixth in the betting league. They're behind United. I don't think that's right.
Okay, I see where you're coming from. I just don't know. I don't trust them. I have a long career of not trusting Arsenal.
Yeah,
and I've never, you know,
you can't get around it. But the problem is, I don't trust Arsenal. I don't trust Chelsea, and I don't trust Man United.
Who you don't trust
the least? It's Leicester City. You've read it here. Everton, by the way, I think could be nailed on for a big season. And we're going to get to fancy football in a minute.
You never know with Everton.
Yeah, they're not going to make the top six. Don't get me wrong. But I do think that the 7th, 8th, 9th race is really interesting as well. And that 7th place obviously could mean a place in Europe, depending on how the cup competitions go. And I think that is going to heat up as we get on. But just before we get to that, relegation, Mick. Who's not going to be contesting for any of those spots we've just mentioned?
I've gone with three, and I'm a little bit conflicted here because it might be a recency bias again in watching the Championship last year and just reading various things about especially the Norwich regime and the Sheffield United manager, and obviously I've been already talking about Villa. I just have a feeling that the three of them are going to be really surprising elements in the league this year, do very, very well. You were talking about earlier before we came on air about Norwich's fixture list, which could leave them in a hole, and it could be very hard to get out of that because they've got such hard games at the start. But I have a feeling that the three of them will get out, and I think Sheffield United and Norwich are both favourites to go down. I think you're looking past them. I'm worried about Brighton. They're 9-5 to go down. I'm worried about Burnley. They're 2-1 to go down. And I'm very, very worried my banker would be Newcastle under Steve Brucey Bruce at 2-1. There's no investment there again. There's only so long you can do it. They've lost Perez as well, who was a seriously good player for them last year. The stats might not even hold that up, but if you actually watched them, Perez
they
was
do
a massive
actually because I this is just before preeminently get into our fantasy football chat. I was looking at comparing Yuri Tielemans since he came into Leicester City in January last year, and Perez, because Perez has now obviously gone to Leicester City and is down as a midfielder rather than a striker. And if you look at per 90 minutes, Perez got 4.27 points last year, which is actually pretty good going when you think that's a goal or an assist, basically. Obviously, you're getting points for in fancy football. So he was, anything Newcastle were doing attacking-wise, he was generally involved in it.
Yeah. Who have you got then? I think that's a massive, massive loss to them, like, and they haven't replaced it.
Yeah, my only thing is the Steve Bruce factor.
the dogged Steve Bruce
dare
factor.
Dare I say, which means, I don't have them in here, but I think I didn't put them in just because I wanted to be a bit fruity. I think they probably are in the they're fourth from bottom, if not third from bottom in mind here.
Know. I'm looking at 2-1 and I'm thinking that's, you know, I said that the Villa in the top 10, 4-1 wasn't my banker of the season. I'm not too far off on that one.
I've gone with Sheffield United, 7-10.
Okay.
I think they're going to finish bottom. I've gone with Burnley at 2-1.
Same as yourself.
And I've gone with Bournemouth at 9-2.
Oh, I had a look at Bournemouth, but then I was looking at their starting 11 and I actually liked the look of it. Yeah. I don't see why they'd regress so much. Maybe if they lose Aki.
There's been a couple of seasons where they've struggled at the start. And you've got, geez, Bournemouth could be in a relegation fight here. And then they've come good. They've ended up safe at mid-table by, this is why I think February, March, they're grand. And this is just one where, what if they get stuck down there and can't get back out? And that's like
a man in a hole.
Exactly. It's all based on is that they've ended up in a hole and there's no ladder. And like, there's probably more reasons. If I sat down and went through it, I'd come out and go, Joe, well, actually, Newcastle are going down. Or there are other people in there, even Crystal Palace could randomly get pulled into it.
They absolutely could. I had Palace on my shortlist, I think, with Hodgson. And actually, one thing I'd say about the three managers that you've picked, and I've picked Burnley as well, so I'm with you, is that I think you've got three very astute, good managers there. You know, in Sheffield United, Burnley, and Bournemouth, you know, and I just think that at least for one of them or two, you would think they'll just have the nous to get out. And I don't know if I think Steve Bruce's nous for that kind of thing was 10 years ago, and I think the game's moved on a little bit. And I think that someone like Roy Hodgson, if he finds himself in a real fight now, you know, is he going to actually change things if Palace need to change things in March?
That was kind of my logic with that. And maybe Bournemouth's the wrong shout. It's just like there's always one team that randomly gets sort of sucked into this fight that have been kind of between 13th and 17th for 3 or 4 years in a row. And then all of a sudden it's like, Jesus, we're in a relegation battle here. And holy Christ,
always
we're gone.
Happens, yeah.
Yeah, so they were just kind of, I was just literally based on that, looking through them. But I actually do think, the more we talk about it, that it's probably actually going to be Newcastle. Like, Newcastle nailed on once Benitez went. It's like, oh, well, they're getting relegated.
I said they might get one of those kind of record point, you know, the 12 points kind of.
But who'd you went with? Sheffield United, Brighton, Burnley and Newcastle. Brighton, I think, could be a surprise package.
I hope they are. I like Brighton.
Yeah, Graham Potter was a really good manager at Östersund. Took them up through the leagues. Beat Arsenal, I think it was, in the Europa League. He did all right at Swansea. They didn't bounce back up into the Premier League. But like, he is a manager. Like, I think we all, as Irish people, had the knee-jerk reaction to what the hell are they doing getting rid of Chris Hughton. And look, that could prove out to be completely right. But I think maybe when you read into it a little bit more, it seemed as if that Brighton weren't saying that Chris Hughton wasn't up to the job, was a bad manager. It was just that the way they were trying to play and the signings they were making, that a more, what would you say, continental-styled manager, such as Graham, or first-team coach, such as Graham Potter, suited them a bit more. And that, again, that has, like, there's lots of examples of this, how it's worked out. Look at Southampton, when they created Nigel Adkins after, had they beaten Man United the week before, and it was like, what the hell are you doing? They get in Mauricio Pochettino.
Yeah, there's disaster. What were they doing?
Yeah.
Lunatic. Couldn't even speak English, Pochettino. What's he ever done in the game? Yeah. I don't know. you could be right, but I just thought, look, do you know what? Signing Mbappe from Brentford for 20 million is a good deal for them because they need a goal scorer. Because I don't think Glenn Murray's doing it anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
So I think
he's
that's
a massive signing.
That is a good one. We should move on, Mark, because we're fast getting lost in the Premier League season ahead weeds. But you asked me to look for young player of the year and player of the year.
Yep.
I couldn't find anyone that I fancied as a bet for player of the year. Kevin De Bruyne is favourite at 6-1.
Kevin De Bruyne is the Paul Flynn of Premier League. He's always the favourite at the start of the year to win player of the year.
Yeah.
But it never wins it.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And it seems like, I don't know, look, he's favourite because I think also players love De Bruyne. So he's got that head start in a PFA vote. Then you have like Sterling and Salah and all these guys kind of 9-1 and pass on that. I've looked down for a value bet on this, right? So yeah. Not someone that I think will necessarily win player of the year. In fact, I probably think he isn't. However, he's far too big odds, right? Rodri, 40-1. I thought he was very good at the weekend. And City are a very, very good chance of winning the league. And if he has one of those Kante-like seasons, that could easily happen. There's no reason that people won't go and vote for this guy.
It's funny.
You know, he's in a good position just being at Man City.
I was getting ready to lambast you for wherever you picked, because the thing with these player of the years and things like that, or top scorers, you look at people and you go, Jesus, they're good odds. And they're good odds for a reason, because they haven't got hope. But Rodri also caught my eye. Yeah. I was like, the two people that caught my eye were Rodri for Man City, just in terms of, like, that's, again, that kind of value. And then Virgil van Dijk for Liverpool, because he's 16-1. And if Liverpool win the Premier League, you're looking at, it's going to be either Mo Salah or Virgil van Dijk to win player of the year.
Yeah.
You're almost guaranteed now. If you think Liverpool are going to win the Premier League, then one of those are going to win player of the year. Mo Salah is 9-1 and van Dijk is 16-1. Sadio Mane is actually 16-1 as well.
That's who I was going for, is Sadio Mane.
But Sadio Mane is going to be out for a few, like, he's probably not going to play the guts of the first month.
Ah, he will. He's back training now. I think he'll miss two or three games, max. I have Mane down as my pick for top goal scorer at 11-1. I had him in my fancy team last year, and he scored every match. I don't think he ever didn't score. He must have got 70 or 80 goals.
I was about to say, that's one that's borderline now. What did you say he is?
11-1.
11-1. So if you put on €10 on that, you lose €10.
Why?
Because the top goal scorer is going to be either Harry Kane.
I think it was third or fourth last
Harry
year.
Harry Kane, Mo Salah, or Sergio Aguero.
That's just because they're the lowest in the odds. Look, I'll be taking more money off Ladbrokes this year than you will with that attitude.
Moving on, Mick, quickly to fantasy football.
Oh,
because that's...
Quickly.
That's what I'm here for.
this is my forte, Mark. I haven't even logged on yet this year. I'm more interested in figuring out my long-term bets.
I've been doing a bit of fishing around. I haven't decided on my team, I haven't decided on the squad. As I said to you earlier on, this transfer window closing before the Premier League starts is great in one way, because you know what you're playing with when you go to make your team on Friday. But the other problem is that there's been about 400 players that have come into the Premier League in the last 24 hours, and I need to get my head around who they are, what their stats are, what they're likely to do, are they going to play, all this stuff. So mostly what I've been looking at actually are teams for the minute and what to focus on for the coming weeks. Because one of the big mistakes people make with a fantasy football team at the start of the year is that they build a team that's going to have a good season. Whereas you don't build your team for a good season. Build your team for a good opening few weeks. So for example, Norwich City, I think, are going to be a value team. Everybody's so cheap in that Norwich team. I don't think they're going to get relegated. Like we're saying, I don't think neither of us are to get relegated. But their opening six matches are Liverpool, Newcastle, Chelsea, West Ham, Man City. So they're playing arguably the top three, or at least with Spurs, three of the top four in the Premier League in their opening six matches.
Yeah.
I think you stay away from Norwich. And they're the type of team where you go, oh, Jesus, sure, I'll buy, you know, the goalkeeper's 4.5, I'll just get him, or whatever it is. Whereas you're looking at Travers for Bournemouth, and they have an easier run of games, is also 4.5. You've got to look at value bets. Even Sheffield United having a bad run at the start of the year. Leicester City, the same. Like, we talked about Leicester, the Tielemans, Perez debate. You've got Jamie Vardy, you've got James Maddison, you've got Pereira at the back. There are so many options at Leicester City. But again, in their first six games, they face Chelsea, Man United, Tottenham. So I don't know if you should be going with someone there. Now, they are, I think they're still going to get points. So attacking-wise, you probably can still risk it to Yelmans or Perez, but defensively, I don't know if you can go for any of those yet. Wolves are difficult enough as well, and they're a team that everyone's going to end up with, like Diego Yata or someone up front, or some of the Wolves players. Matt Doherty, maybe a lot of people are going to be entranced by him, but again, I would avoid them for the opening weeks. Whereas on the flip side of that, Everton, they start the season against Crystal Palace. They then play Watford, Aston Villa, Wolves, Bournemouth and Sheffield United. I think you need to have two Everton players in that team.
Everton could be top of the league.
Yep.
Start of September.
You have to. I think you need to have either Seamus Coleman or Ding, Lucas Ding, whatever it's pronounced.
Dinya.
Dinya. And then you've got plenty of options. You've got Moise Keane. Give it Moise. He's only, I think, 7 or 7.5 million up front. That's not a bad shout.
Richarlison, was my man last year. Never left my team.
He had an incredible start to the season last year.
Played well all the way through. Good player. Everton's young player of the year last year. Can he win the real young player of the year, the PFA young player of the year this year? I can't find the odds right in front of me right now, but he's on the list somewhere.
One last thing just to bounce up before we move on. Steve Okereke, 5.5 million. Sadio Mane, only coming back of his holidays. And you can just sing his name every time he scores.
Yeah.
But 5.5 to play up front, he's probably going to start to open a few games.
He's going to start a few games, I think.
Again, not you see, you don't buy him. People go looking for planning for the season. They're like, geez, I'm not buying Origi. So you've got Firmino, Mane and Salah. But you're only buying him for a few weeks. Time to move on, though, Mick.
This is the this is the first of 38, or well, I don't know how many we're doing. First of 33 odd Saturdays that we'll be.
I'm excited. This is 1-2-3. Is as we mentioned earlier on, it's a free game you can play on Ladbrokes, where they pick out three of the upcoming football matches.
Yeah, generally,
for the
TV games. Generally, for the most part. Yeah.
So the three Premier League matches this weekend, you have to correctly predict the score in each of those matches. You can play it for absolutely free. If you correctly get all three, you win €100 cash. If you manage to get two of them, you win a €5 free bet. And if you only get one of them, which isn't that hard to do, you get a €1 free bet.
So it's a €1 for that.
Exactly. What are the games this weekend, Mick?
They are Spurs versus Aston Villa at 5 Saturday.
Correct.
Then the Sunday games, Newcastle versus Arsenal and Manchester United versus Chelsea.
What are you going for?
I'm going for 1-1 in Villa and Spurs. So you'll see this in our 1-2-3 video that we did. This is me absolutely being bullish about Villa, right? But there's also just the element of, I think, just catching teams unaware. I don't think we'll have a great record against the top six over the course of the season, but I think, you know, early stage, I think Villa are raring to go, buzzing after pre-season. I think Spurs will limp into the season a little bit, and I think we'll catch them unawares. We might get an early goal, or we'll do like in Ireland an Italian 90 and just kind of like not let the game get away from us and sneak an equaliser. So I actually think 1-1 is the most likely result, believe it or not.
I'm going to go with
2-0 to Spurs.
No, I'll say 2-1. I think Harry Kane, and again, just back in fantasy for a minute, you need Harry Kane and Mo Salah in your team. Just get them in. They're too hard to bring in. Whenever we're planning for the opening weeks, and if they're not going to do much, they're too hard to get in later on in the year. I think if you don't have the two of them in your team at the start, you're goosed. And I think Kane is going to hit the ground running this season. He takes a while to get going a lot of the time, but I think this is the season.
Doesn't he
he's
have like
back
no
refreshed.
Goals in August until last season or something
yeah,
like that?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But no, this is the year. I think he's going to score. Troy Parrott's going to come off the bench and get one.
He
and they're going to beat Villa
2-1. Right, okay. Newcastle-Arsenal, you go first this time.
Newcastle-Arsenal 3-0.
Okay, I'm going for 2-1 for Arsenal here, because even though we've talked about how bad Newcastle are, I still think Arsenal are always liable to be caught. You know,
if they're ever
away
a team,
from home, I could see Arsenal go down 1-0 after 8 minutes, and I was saying, Jesus, Newcastle lads, they might be alright this year. And then Arsenal dominate for 82 minutes.
If there's ever a team that Arsenal are going to Arsenal against, it's Newcastle.
Away,
and didn't
yeah.
it happen, was it the second game of the season or the first game of the season 2 years back when Joey Barton got sent off and was possibly going to be going to Arsenal back then? It was a mad game. Man United against Chelsea, Mick.
Right, I'm going for, this has, like, it's first day of the season, which always kind of, well, it's a Sunday, but it always gives us a little bit of kind of, do you know what it does? It always hooks us in to look forward to the rest of the season ahead, and I feel like this game is going to just be a little bit weird. Teams aren't fully fit yet. I think they're going to be loose at the back. You know, you might have Harry Maguire playing after training for 3 days with his new club. I think there's going to be goals, and I think it's going to be 2-2.
Two all.
Yeah, I'm not. Do you know what? if none of these go right, I'm going to have to go to start playing the percentages in this game. But it's early in the season. I'm feeling romantic.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go wild and just go with my gut. 2-2.
I have never been so confused going into a game between top clubs in the Premier League before. I have no idea what's going to happen in this game.
Exactly. That's why I think
yeah, it's about, and no one can, because they're all unknown quantities, really. But that being said, I'm going to go with Chelsea 1-0. I think just...
low score.
Yeah, the Chelsea kind of know what they're at the last while, the last few weeks. There's still so much unrest around the United squad, the camp, with stuff, you know, what's happening, who's going in, who's going out. I just think that Chelsea are slightly a little bit more settled. So I'm going to go with a narrow 1-0 win for Chelsea.
Right, well, we've three different scores there anyway. So
three
we'll
different
see how
scores.
We get on.
We'll see how we get on.
You can play for free yourself on
exactly.
1-2-3 on Ladbrokes.
Go to ladbrokes.com, play yourself. As we said, you can win €100 cash should you get all three scores correctly. What
and
we're going to do,
more importantly than winning £100, is you could win £100 every week for the rest of the season. And then, but also, you can keep your own little score and see how you're paying, if you're, you know, if you can beat the two of us. Probably easier to beat the two of us than win the £100.
Yeah, exactly. Even just play with your friends and compare to each other. That's what we're going to do. We're going to look back at these each week. See, if you get one correct, if you get a score correct, you get a point. We're going to have a league table between the two of us and see who can come out on top at the end of the season. But anyhow, it is time to move on to rugby. Like we said, we're about to chat to Stephen Ferris about Ireland's upcoming warm-up game against Italy on Saturday. Right, we're delighted to be joined by a man who will be our regular rugby analyst on the show, Stephen Ferris. Stephen, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Starting to get excited now. Obviously, Ireland playing on Saturday against Italy, and the World Cup that everybody's been talking about for the last 4 years is finally upon us. So, yeah, getting excited.
Exactly. I was about to say that it's one of those things that just sort of, I don't know where it starts to come, and now it's going to be, we're building up, it's a good time of the year. These warm-ups, how much emphasis do you place on getting wins or losses in this? Like, I know back in 2011, you lost your all four warm-up games and then went on and had a fantastic pool stage in the World Cup. Is it important to, is it just getting reps in, getting back into the swing of things, or are you looking to get some results on the board?
Yeah, of course, you don't want to, you know, I think 2011, the last thing we wanted to do was have four losses getting into that World Cup. However, it was good in terms of the quality of the opposition that we faced. And then we were able to go away, analyse what the last four games had thrown at us, and then try and put it right, get into the World Cup. I think this time round, obviously, there's, you know, a number of tough games also with Wales home and away, and, you know, obviously a big physical English side to come up against. I think for me, the most important thing is, looking back on 2011, was I was out for a number of months with a knee injury, and then come back and got a bit of game time during those World Cup warm-up matches, so that I was almost firing in all cylinders getting into the World Cup. And I feel that some of the Irish players are maybe in a similar position. You look at somebody like, you know, the Irish captain and Rory Best hasn't played since, you know, it feels like an eternity ago. He needs to get game time. You know, he needs to get minutes under his belt. Johnny Sexton didn't play a whole lot of rugby last year. People were questioning his form, and likewise Conor Murray. So, you know, these four games, yes, of course, to go back to your point, you want to get wins. That's important, of course. But I think it's more the combination and getting guys hitting a little bit of form before they land in Japan.
In terms of then, like, if you look at, is it diet preparation compared to, this is a question that is going to be asked at every, going into every World Cup, I think. But like the pace that is played at, that sort of thing that, you know, you might want to be minding yourself a little bit going into the World Cup, compared to the Rugby Championship that's happening in the Southern Hemisphere at the minute, like, what would you think is the ideal preparation that way? Is there a benefit there to those Southern Hemisphere teams that they're all going to blazing at the minute?
I'm not sure. I think if you ask the Southern Hemisphere players what they would prefer, they would maybe say they would like a pre-season with a bit of a rest before the pre-season, and then hit the ground running fresh, where, you know, they don't have that opportunity. They're straight, you know, from that championship into a World Cup, more or less, give a week or two. So I think it's 6-2-3, really, to be honest with you. And, you know, each team prepares differently. This has been the case. This has been the way it's been over the last number of World Cups. So their preparation is probably going to be slightly different than the Northern Hemisphere's. But at the end of the day, you know, the end result is that when they land in Japan and, you know, they come up in their first game, that they're all feeling pretty good. And, you know, I don't think there's any advantages of playing hard, grueling test matches at the minute out in the Southern Hemisphere compared to, you know, a hard pre-season and, you know, a couple of tough test matches in the World Cup one-off game. So, as I alluded to there, it's probably 6-2-3, really.
Yeah, whatever about whether it's the ideal preparation or not, and, you know, there's obviously a lot of chance of injury and everything like that. What would worry me, Stephen, I don't know if you feel the same, is that the likes of South Africa, who are kind of building, obviously, with Razzy Erasmus there, and they're kind of getting into almost reaching their peak. And if you saw, like, obviously the game against New Zealand last week where they drew, and that they just look like they're hitting a peak at exactly the right time. And of course, it's either if Ireland get out of the group, we're playing either them or the All Blacks in the quarterfinals. You know, so whatever about whether it's the ideal preparation for them or not, it feels like for me that South Africa are just kind of kicking on at exactly the right time, and them having real competitive matches at this time of year is definitely not going to do them any harm.
No, it's hard to disagree with that. But when is the right time to peak? You know, is it now? Is it 2 months' time in a World Cup quarterfinal? We all know how professional rugby pans out, and, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks is a long, long time in the game. And Ireland could find really good form in the group stage, go unbeaten through that, and then the next thing you know, Tommy Sarrison, Conor Murray, Rory Burns, Peter O'Mahony, all our leaders are standing up and they're playing superb rugby. And that's when it really matters, is when you get to that knockout stage. I don't think it matters, you know, at the start of August. And, you know, I just think you can't just say, oh, South Africa are, you know, real contenders now for the World Cup just because they drew with New Zealand at the weekend. I think they've still got demons from what's happened over the last couple of years. But in fairness, your point, they're going to try and keep that momentum going into the World Cup, where Ireland are trying to generate a bit of momentum because of the disappointment of the Six Nations that they're off the back of. So, again, arguments for both causes, really. But, you know, you are right. It's South Africa are looking like a team that are starting to peak. And, you know, obviously Ireland's going to face New Zealand or South Africa in that quarterfinal. So every Irish fan watching the championship at the minute on Saturday mornings are a little bit shakier than they were 12 months ago, that's for sure.
Yeah,
definitely. Right. Talk to us a little bit, Stephen, about being in these warm-up camps. I suppose we're talking about the excitement and getting ready for the World Cup. That's going to be felt, obviously, even more so by the players. But is it a case of just trying to settle all that excitement, just focus on the next training session, the next game, and hopefully, obviously, everyone's looking to book their place on the plane, but even those that are really guaranteed to be there, that just can cabin fever that set in, or are you just trying to focus day by day?
Yeah, well, I think one thing has changed is that the Irish lads this World Cup pre-season, they've changed their training venue a few times, are now training at the high performance facility that's now being built. There doesn't seem to be the Groundhog Day, kind of just waking up in Carton House every day and through the motions, the same thing. You know, the gym facilities changed, the indoor pitch facility that they now have, able to practice lineouts when it's the weather's bad outside. You know, they've got that at their disposal now, and I think, you know, slight changes like that makes preparation a hell of a lot easier. There's nothing worse than just being stuck in camp all the time. And I can remember in 2011, Dennis Leamy, Mick O'Driscoll, Rory Best and myself going out and playing like 7 or 8 holes of golf 2 or 3 nights a week just to kind of get your head away from rugby. You know, you just need a break. And even that coach journey from Carton House out to the new high-performance facility just kind of gives you that half an hour of getting your head away from the game. And that's really, really important. But, you know, I think the guys will just be getting through the training sessions, getting the workload done, and keeping themselves excited and motivated. And I think, you know, the biggest job for Joe Smith is to make sure that his lads are getting to this World Cup mentally fresh, because they physically will be at the top of their game. There's no doubt about that. But it's the mental side of things that we know Ireland have struggled with in the past, and I'm part of that, especially when it comes to knockout rugby.
Yeah. I'm going to just a quick look at the squad. Obviously, everything will become a lot clearer over the next 5 weeks after Ireland have played four matches, and we'll kind of have more of an idea what the 31-man squad is going to be. But I was just looking specifically at the back row, your area of expertise, Stephen, and myself and Morris on our rugby show a couple of weeks ago went and kind of picked the squad, and the back row was one where we kind of had a little bit of a disagreement, because I think we're looking at five dedicated back rows going on the plane.
Yeah.
You're almost sure that Stander, O'Matney, Van der Fleer and Conan, given his form over the last 12 months, are going to be there. So then it comes down to Ruddock versus Jordy Murphy versus Tommy O'Donnell as the people who are in camp at the moment. I'm just wondering who you think is the right man there, because you're kind of looking at maybe Jordy Murphy coming back into form with Ulster last year. Definitely more of a kind of a dedicated seven. Reece Ruddock, though, offers so much in terms of even like big game experience, leadership, around the squad and stuff. So I'm just wondering what you think about that decision that Joe has to make.
Yeah, well, it's not an easy one, but I think with the way Joe's selection process and his mind has went over the last number of years, he would tend to go with Jordy Murphy, 70-80% of the time, if it came down to it. I think I kind of look at it and go, right, Josh Van der Fleer, he's had a lot of injuries over the last few years. You know, what's the chances of him staying completely injury-free until a quarter-final of a World Cup without picking up a niggle here or there along the way? So the only other standout seven for me that has played consistently at seven for Ulster over the last year is Jordy Murphy. I think if Josh Van der Fleer went down injured, was out for a few weeks or out for the rest of the tournament, please God that doesn't happen. But, you know, I think Jordy Murphy's the only other seven that's got the big game experience to mix it at Test Rugby. You know, Tommy O'Donnell, he's fought back from a big injury also. Does he have the pedigree? I think he does, but it just probably hasn't had the same exposure and opportunity as Jordy Murphy. And Reece Ruddock, I probably would be one of his biggest fans, and I think he always produces in the big games. You just have to look at him in that Leinster versus Glasgow final. He was absolutely superb. And I think somebody like him could miss out just because not being able to play that seven role. So, yeah, I think my prediction would be that Jordy Murphy will probably get that last spot as a set-back rower.
Then looking at the squad as a whole, is there anybody else outside of the back row that you're looking at going into these warm-up games that has a real opportunity of putting their hand up?
I think everybody in the squad will have an opportunity to put their hand up over the next four games. It's going to be interesting to see what Joe goes with. I've harped on about it before, but I really would have liked to have seen Stuart McCloskey being in one of those training squads at some stage, and he just hasn't really featured. But that's what seems to have sealed until Joe moves on to new pastures after the World Cup. Anybody who I think is going to stand out, I think Tadhg Byrne really needs to find a bit of form that he had when he was at the Scarlets. I think he was given that opportunity, a couple of opportunities for Ireland, especially against England, and he didn't. I don't know. It just seemed that against Wales, wasn't it? Against Wales that he started. And I just think that he just wasn't the Tadhg Byrne that we've seen 12 months previous. I'm not sure why that is. Coaches, the environment. So I think this block of games is massive for Tadhg Byrne, and also is he an option to play in the back row because he was so effective for Scarlets when he played there also. So I'm a massive fan of his, and hopefully he comes up trumps with some good performances over the next few weeks and make sure that he's on the plane.
Obviously there's a few tough games ahead with England and Wales. It's hard to know what way to approach this, and like we were talking about earlier on at the Italy game this weekend in terms of wins and losses, but currently on Ladbrokes, Ireland, the handicap is -25. Do you think we can beat that at the weekend? I know it's a hard prediction to make.
Well, look, who knows? Like it's one of those ones where I think Italy coming off the back of a big pre-season, I think it was Luke McGrath and Chris Farrell were talking during the week in the press conference about Italy, and know, what threats they're going to pose, etc. And they looked at the game last year in Six Nations and, you know, the amount of mistakes that they made against Italy, and they can't afford to do that again, etc., etc. I think it's going to be close, a lot closer than 25 points. I think there's going to be mistakes. There's going to be new combinations. There's going to be, you know, things tried out that they've been talking about in the preseason leading up to it. Nothing's going to be fluid and nothing's going to be absolutely perfect. And for that reason, I think 25 points is you know, a pretty big spread. And Italy want to kind of get a little bit of momentum after the disappointing couple of seasons that they've had. So, yeah, for me, you know, I don't think Ireland's going to put a cricket score on them anyway.
Yeah, probably for Italy, like whatever we talk about with Ireland in terms of how they approach them, with this game and then Russia coming up in a week's time as well, they probably will be tired in trying to get a couple of wins or get at least a decent performance against Ireland and sort of build into that, get a bit of momentum going into it.
Yeah, look, it's all about momentum. And, you know, in the World Cup 2011 that I was part of, we hit the ground running when we landed in New Zealand. That's what we had to do after the couple of losses that we had in the World Cup warm-up games. And once you get that momentum, you're pretty hard to stop. And it takes a bloody good performance and a good team to halt that. In 2007, I was part of a group and I'm part of a squad that had absolutely no momentum. We were trying to find something, get something going, and it just didn't happen. You remember the Bayonne palaver that Brian O'Driscoll got punched in the face, and was he going to be fit? And, you know, guys were, you know, it was the same 23 being 22 at that stage being wheeled out week in, week out, and there was just absolutely no momentum. So for Italy, they got to find something, or else they're going to have another disappointing campaign, another disappointing block in their calendar year when it comes to the rugby. And they'll be trying to find something, and, you know, give Ireland another scare. But I think Ireland will win the game and win it comfortably. But, you know, in a pre-season friendly, to win a game by over 25 points, considering there's going to be numerous changes throughout, I think is pretty high.
That's your first Ladbrokes prediction of the build-up podcast season, Stephen. So we'll have to keep tabs on how you're getting on when we chat to you again next week. Can I ask you for one more quickly before we go, though? Because we were talking about the Rugby Championship earlier, and I was looking at it a few minutes ago on Ladbrokes at this weekend's game. And it's Bledisloe Cup match. It's in Australia. And you're thinking, right, God, I'm looking forward to getting up on Saturday morning to watch this. And I see New Zealand are minus 11 favourites for this game. Like,
yeah.
I know Australia are, look, they've had a lot, they've had a bad 12, 18 months with Michael Checker there. I thought they'd steadied the ship a little bit, but, you know, even for New Zealand to be that big favourites on the road is just shows you kind of where Australia are at the moment, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I really wasn't impressed with New Zealand for the first 20 minutes against South Africa last weekend, and if anything, South Africa should have been a couple more scores up. It's been played in Perth, I think, this weekend. I just can't see Australia winning, to be honest with you, and that 11 points is probably about right. I think New Zealand are a couple of scores better even away from home than this Australian outfit. And you talk about momentum, like, where are Australia going to find this momentum? They need something. They need a spark, a massive win, like, you know, beating New Zealand this weekend to kickstart something for them. So No, I just can't see them winning. I'm trying to find a couple of thoughts on why Australia should win that game. But to be honest, I just can't find any. It's just so negative around Australian rugby at the minute. And with the All Blacks being the favourites for the Rugby World Cup 2019, I just can't see them losing, even away from home.
Good stuff. Stephen, thanks very much for chatting to us, and we will talk to you soon.
Cheers, lads. Cheers, boys.
Great stuff there from Stephen Ferris. We'll be looking forward to chatting to him as the weeks go by. But now we are joined in studio by one Maurice Brosnan. Maurice, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mina, for having me. I'm always delighted to talk about sports or anything in general, really, Mark.
I would say, does it feel weird being this side of the table, now me talking to you, asking you questions, rather than our usual GA?
Yeah, it's a weird dynamic, but I actually think I like it, taking a slightly more of a backseat. Like, let's be honest, the presenter is usually supposed to question the expert. So this dynamic is much more beneficial than...
Well, than me and Morris still aren't on speaking terms after our falling out on the three-man weave this week.
I came in this morning and he hit me an awful jostle coming in the office door.
There'll be no Super 8 structural discussions on this show.
But if you want to hear one...
The two of you, though, are obviously... you do have another podcast, World and Union, our rugby show. And Morris, you are an integral part of that, so I believe. Are you looking forward to the season getting back into full swing in the Northern Hemisphere?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, this is it's an interesting time of the year, and it's kind of phony wars. It's supposed to be building up to something much bigger at the end of it. The only thing is that, given the pool structures this time round for Ireland, that their two big hitters actually come first. They're front loaded as opposed to the last two World Cups. I think actually their most important games were towards the end of their group stages. So based off that, you actually place a small bit more importance on these games that you kind of need to generate form now, as opposed to generating it in your early pool games, I suppose.
Exactly, as Steve mentioned, you want to get that momentum going into it. But we are here to talk about GAA and the upcoming All-Ireland final, All-Ireland semi-finals between Dublin and Mayo and Tyrone and Kerry. You have been looking through the two teams, as is your want, or as the two games, I should say. What have you picked out? What do you think is going to happen here? And what value bets have you been looking at?
See, it's like, if we start with Dublin and Mayo, maybe, firstly, it's a game that I firstly cannot wait for. I think I speak on behalf of the nation when I say
we'll probably watch it.
They can't wait for it. But it's an interesting one, right? Because there's been a lot of talk about, we've spoken at length about this as well, there's been a lot of talk about Mayo have a very good defence, maybe not as well assisted by their forwards. Simultaneously, Dublin also are in a similar kind of dynamic in that they're a bit more exposed. You know, there's slightly bigger gaps between their full-back line and their half-back line, if you want to play that way. So these teams will kind of match up to each other perfectly, which is brilliant. And they're something that, you know, would get you really excited. But based off that, if you look, you know, in previous games, I don't know if this game will be as high-scoring as people imagine it might be. So, I mean, what's the over-under this game, Mick? Probably, 40 or more?
Oh, wow, Morris. 39.5.
39, is it? 39.5, yeah. Okay.
So the 40 will just about get you the over,
so,
yeah.
So 39 is...
And they're the same odds for both of them on that side, so...
I'd say that's in and around what the 2017 game was, between these two teams, where there was two goals, 39. The year before, it was less. The year before, again, it was less. Dublin only scored 2-9 that year.
And going back on something that Mark was moaning about on yesterday's podcast, the forecast for Croke Park on Saturday is pissings of rain.
So neither of these teams generally have given up a huge amount of goals against each other. It's about two a game. So you're talking about, I don't know if there's a shootout like that. I actually think it'll be less than that. I think these are two good defences in terrible conditions, teams that don't generally give up goals. The only question mark over that, and it's something that we can talk about now with the game, the only question mark with that is, if Mayo starts Henley, how does that impact how you think the over-under is? Because he's way more liable to have a howler. I can't believe in 2019 we're previewing a Dublin Mayo game and talking about whether or not Henley is going to start. But it's crucial. It's absolutely crucial, lads. 29 or 24 kickouts went long against Donegal. That's huge. If you think about teams that press up like
definitely
that...
Definitely wasn't 29 out of 24.
21 out of 24, sorry. 21 out of 24 kickouts went long against Donegal. So that's huge.
Yep.
And actually, even if you don't necessarily win all those, because Mayo's tackle count was twice what Donegal's was, you're way more liable to win the ball back in that scenario, even if the ball is long, as opposed to going short. He's got a much nicer trajectory, if that's
it goes like an arrow rather than it floating up and hanging,
which makes
in the
it
air.
Way easier to anticipate if it is a floater like that. So from a kickout perspective, I think Henley is the better option. But then you talk about pure shot stopper, and like, don't forget, Mayo will give up goal chances. They absolutely will. If you think back to last weekend, for example, like Liam McLoone's wide, which we laughed about yesterday, that was a goal chance. The one he kicked on his left. Yeah. He just needs to carry the ball slightly closer. So they will give you those chances. Just because Henley didn't have saves to make doesn't mean those chances weren't afforded. And while Donegal didn't take them, the conversion was poor, Dublin's is incredible and they absolutely will. So which makes you kind of wonder about... You play to your percentages. If kickouts are going to be so important, you pick a player who's a better kickouts. But in a game like this, when saves come into it, that goes back in Clark's favour, which is why that the only question mark over whether or not this game could be a high scoring game is how reliable your goalkeeper will be from shot stopping.
This is the exact conversation Stephen Rochford and his backroom team had between the original game and the replay.
Exactly, yeah.
Henley got brought in. I think Henley had a very good, was it the Armagh game? He was lethal in goals in terms of shot stopping. So was it, I can't remember if it was Armagh or Down. It was the Down game, maybe.
I think it was, yeah.
But
no, Clark was in Armagh, yeah, so it was Down, yeah.
It was Down. So, like, I don't know, that could be, you know, we could be overstating. I'm actually agreeing with your first part, which is that under 40 or under 39.5 points mightn't be a bad shout, especially if the weather's going to be bad. The 2017 final was 117-116, which comes in at just under.
And the other games were probably less, twice, I'd say. The year before definitely was less, 2-9-1. When Henley actually had his howler, it was, yeah, I think that's interesting that it's set at that, but given the conditions and the history of these two teams, I think that might be achievable. The other thing on this, right, Dublin, there's a lot of talk about Dublin's bench, which I think I might have even referred to as a myth previously, that their bench is as strong. Now, I didn't mean that in that it is actually, they've got obviously got very deep reserves, but what I meant was that last burst that we always talk about, the Dublin burst, 55 minutes to 65 minutes, that comes from their starters, that comes from Fenton, that comes from McCaffrey, that comes from Conn, that comes from Mannion. It's very rarely that this year particularly is it coming from, so I like in terms of whatever happens there, but if you think about that, the reason that that's so crucial, that burst, is because teams are predominantly, they're in touch at half time. Like Mead, who had 9% conversion at half time. Have you ever heard the likes of that before? They're only 4 points off Dublin at half time in the Leinster final, but 9% conversion. Cork should have been 3, and the goal at the end was 6. I think Mayo were definitely, 2017 were ahead. The year before, Dean Ross scored a free, and then there was the goals. So Mayo have been ahead at half time as well. I think Dublin will get that burst, and Dublin will probably win this game. They're favourites, and rightly so. But there is absolutely there's a decent chance that Mayo could be up at half time and Dublin will win on full time. That because of that factor, like Mayo will bring, they will try and impose this and play it on their own terms. And because of that, I think that Mayo fighting in and moving towards that mightn't be a bad shot either. I'm interested what that is.
9-2 on Ladbrokes for Mayo to lead at half time. Mayo half time, Dublin full time.
That sounds good.
When you think think about the Cork game, lads. That like I know the second that burst it. Totally skewed that game, but Cork were within touching distance at half time. Meath were within touching distance at half time. Are Mayo a better team than both of them? I would say yes. Are they capable of being ahead at half time? Definitely. Now the thing is that burst is going to come, and I don't really know how you stop it. Like Durkin will probably go on Jack McCaffrey, and he could square him off maybe for 50 minutes. But that, you know, is he? Will he outlast? Like Jack McCaffrey isn't just about pace. Like he'll bide his time. You talked about this before at the Cork game. He'll wait. He's patient. You're like, is he even in the game? And then suddenly it's a mad burst in those 10 minutes and he's 2-1 on the scoreboard and he's absolutely blitzed you. Fenton, like I wouldn't be one bit surprised. There's a lot of talk. Like, will it be one of the O'Shea's or Ruan? We talked about this before, Mark. What do you want at Fenton? You want somebody who's athletic, who'll put him on the back foot, who's defensive and who'll compete with him physically. Mayo have the archetypal man.
Lee Keegan.
Lee Keegan should go on Fenton, I think. And he could do a job on him for 50 minutes. But what happens when that late Murphy burst? What happens when Fenton does that to Keegan? That's why I still would favour Dublin to win this game. But by the same token, even if they get those matchups right, that should have him close, competitive for at least 35 minutes. I think there's a chance.
We have a full podcast on this on Friday. Lads.
Exactly. I forgot to say. Moving on quickly to Kerry and Tyrone.
Yeah, like
this is what we were saying before you were in earlier, that this is the secret semi-final of the ages, because everyone's worried about the other match and this could actually be bloody brilliant.
Yeah, like, it could be low-key one of the best semi-finals in living memory.
Yeah, maybe. Like,
oh, he doesn't agree.
I don't know. For it to be one of the semi-final of the ages, I don't have to come out and play more, and I don't think they will. I think they'll reverse and try and frustrate Kerry the way that they have done. And if they do drop off that way, that means that nobody's pressing up on David Moran when he drops deep and gets on ball. That means that he's accurate kickpassing. He's seamless. He's one of the best he's the best kickpasser in the game this season, definitely. He starts spraying ball inside. That means that they're moving quickly. You're trying to drop bodies back ahead of a ball that's being kicked, which is a really hard thing to do. So you put yourself on the back foot straight away. Tyrone could well come out and hunt Moran out and push Matty Donnelly up alongside McShane and have Morley and Foley in a world of trouble, which is, they definitely would if they did that, but I don't think they will do that. I think they'll revert to a much safer option and try and frustrate Kerry and allow more and all that freedom in the space and maybe hunt out Clifford, but Gainey starts getting on ball at centre forward as he's tended to, and Sean O'Shea does all his hard work, and you've got players like Moynihan and Burns and O'Brien and Gavin White carrying the way they do, and that suddenly they become in a sense overrun, but it's counter to what Tyrone should do, but I think they will do it.
If Kerry take the lead much in the same way as Cork kind of did against Tyrone and kind of give them that bit of a scare and force them to come out and play a little bit of football, can you see Tyrone reverting then and maybe we get the game to Mark are talking about if Kerry take 4 or 5 point lead early on?
To chase it, yeah. I think that's like they have to do that. You have to become more offensive if you're chasing the game, and they probably would end up pushing up there. And they would, like, if they did that, Morley, I think, is probably going to take McShane, so he's probably physically able for him, but I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody like Enright not be dedicated to be a man marker and drop into that space as a ad hoc sweeper, kind of dropping back off. So then you've got somebody, but what will they do with Matty Donnelly? That's probably where Jason Foley will go. You don't know how much you'd fancy those matches, but Jason Foley playing, marking him at half forward, Foley is fast and can put him on the back foot as well. And it's like Foley is as able to get forward as Murphy or Gavin White, but doesn't do it because he's playing the full back line and that's not his job. But if you let him, I mean, if you give him that road, he'll take it. So I think the only thing that, even if McShane is inside himself, I think there's goals in this game. There's definitely goals in this game if you put McShane inside like that. Like Tyrone, even with this totally, like they're leaky still. Like they don't have man markers. As in, I'm talking about like a Gormley and McMiniman. Like they've got bodies back and load, and they'll frustrate you that. But they actually don't have a man marker. Like
Hampsey is probably their best. And McNamee as well. McNamee and Hampsey. And like I don't know if Hampsey's going to start.
Well, yeah, Hampsey probably won't start. Yeah. So McNamee would probably, it's Clifford. That's the obvious matchup, yeah. I think. So and to be honest, I'd nearly fancy McNamee in a situation like that with help around him. That I think he could. He's this year he's been peerless. He's definitely the best marker this year. So him with bodies around him, I would fancy him do that. But like if Gainey ends up on, let's say Gainey ends up on McKernan. So at the half forward line, like how badly are you worried for McKernan there one on one with Gainey? I'd be pretty worried if that was me looking at that. Hugh Pat McGeary or whoever ends up on the other wing, who's going to live with, like the only player who could live with Stephen O'Brien is probably Peter Hart will have to, and that means you're robbing one of your best attacking players to stick him on somebody who's athletic as Stephen O'Brien is. So I don't know how well Tyrone are suited to this Kerry team in that sense, but at the same time, Kerry still, like, this is going back to the Mayo example. Like the big question mark about that Mayo example is there's a huge question mark whether or not they're going to give up goals, that there's a flaw, and that is still there for Kerry, definitely there for Kerry. And in that scenario, you think that even if whoever does come on top, I think this game could have, there could be goals, lads. That's what I'm saying. I think that whatever, like 3, potentially 4 goals, I think is like, I think this, if I'm saying that the Dublin Mayo generally have 1 or 2, I think this could be more.
So you think maybe over 37.5 if there's goals in it?
Yeah, I'd be open to that, yeah.
That's what's been backed actually. That spread might go up actually because it's 8 to 11 against evens for the under of 37.5. So I think it's low enough score, and if you think there's going to be goals, I think that could be the one to look at, you know?
And yeah, the only other thing is, like, again, going back to Saturday's game, like how conditions impact that as well. But like Tyrone have the potential to make this an all time semi final and win. Like, do you know, like both in terms of style and substance, how they set out to play and how they measure, I think they have the potential to make this. But like it's a total reversion from what they've done ever since the Donegal game, really. Yeah. Bar a small phase against Cork.
I don't think they have to go mental. Like, the Cork-Tyrone game was also good in the first half when Cork were going at them. And, like, I think Tyrone, that the game a couple of years ago as well, it was bad conditions, and that wasn't a classic. But if you have slightly better conditions, I think in Tyrone's current guys, even if they're not going all-out attack, that this could be interesting because Kerry are going to go at them, and then Tyrone will be able to hit them on the counter attack. With the running game against Kerry, could be interesting to watch as well. What is Matty Donnelly to score any time, a goal any time?
Matty Donnelly to score any time is 4-1.
4-1. If there are goals in this game, as you predict, Morris, Matty Donnelly is going to get one of them.
Yeah, I agree.
Him or Cathal McShane, but I think Donnelly is the sneaky one. He could.
Yeah, Conor McShane's only 2-1. So you're probably, if you're going to, you're better off going for Donnelly.
If Mahan Donnelly is close to goal and being marked by Jason Foley, he's definitely the ability to get a goal.
David Clifford to get a goal in All Ireland semi final, 7-4.
Oh, for the love of God.
Against a defensive, a brilliantly defensive team. Like.
And a great goalkeeper.
Yeah.
But anyway, we will be exploring those two semi-finals in much more detail on our Three-Man Weave podcast on Friday, so make sure to listen to that. But before we go, we've got a couple of different things to do. We have a couple of concepts here we're going to explore. The first one, Mick, we're calling Get Hyped. So when you see Dre, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like we're getting hyped tonight. So the aim of this is simple. We've talked about some of the obvious sporting events that are happening over the coming weekend. We've talked about the rugby, the Premier League coming back, the GAA semi-finals. But there's so much sport going on elsewhere. And each week, one of us is tasked with finding something that's happening and telling the rest of us why we need to care about it. So Morris is still here. You're going to have to convince myself and Morris that whatever you're about to tell us about, we need to pay attention to.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of top-level sport going on this weekend. And I couldn't, like, in my head, it's to be like, this is where I get to talk about the Ashes or something like that and tell you a few bets of sneaky stuff that I'm watching. There isn't really anything like that that's sticking out to me this weekend. However, I did find a fixture in the lower levels of English football that's really jumping out to me because it's in League One this weekend, the second week of the league, Ipswich Town versus Sunderland. It's the Roy Keane and Mick McCarthy derby. It's two teams that really shouldn't be in League One, right? You've got an Irish interest there with Aidan McGeady versus Alan Judge. You've got the potential fire with Will Grigg playing up front, of course. You know, that could happen any time. He could go on fire.
He could spontaneously combust.
Interesting one for you here, Mark, that you'll be interested in. Grant Ledbetter is still playing football.
I saw that at the weekend. I was actually looking at Sunderland's starting team because I was just looking, Jesus, how is Ledbetter there?
And if you're
obviously Aidan McGeady
if you're picking any team for Ledbetter to be at, it'd be either Sunderland or Ipswich, wouldn't it? I think, you know.
Yep.
So anyway, Sunderland only drew 1-1 with Oxford away in their first game of the season. Ipswich won 1-0. I fancy Ipswich to get promoted here. But they're only 17-10 to win this game at home on Ladbrokes. I actually think they will. I also think there'll be goals in this game because how could there not be for such an ding-dong League One fixture, always has goals in it. Over 2.5 goals, 21-20. I think that's the one to be watching out for this week. That's my Get Hyped debut.
Yeah, Sunderland as well are giant favourites to get promoted, or to win League One outright, with Portsmouth at 9-2. Ipswich are 7-1, third favourite. So there's a massive gap there, really, between the top two and the rest, according to
But Sunderland were the same last year and didn't do it, and they've started off in much the same way this year by going behind and only getting an equaliser at Oxford. So
there are probably two. You know, we talk about wanting the big clubs to get back into the Premier League. Yeah. Leeds are a classic example. Like, if you talk about big clubs, you want to get back into the Championship, they're probably both. I remember last year, even though Mick McCarthy was gone and rubbing salt into the wounds that they might be playing nice football, but they're doing it in League One. Their gates were massively up. Like, they had 20,000+, I think, at games last year. So in terms of getting big clubs back into, if not the Premier League, certainly the Championship.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think Sunderland, even, you'd love them in the Premier League, but Ipswich at least need to be in the Championship. They need to be competing in the Championship.
Because you talk about, like, the Championship being brilliant. We, like, last year were so obsessed with it because we've got a lot of, like, Leeds fans, and we've got Mick Aston Villa fan in the office. I'm now a Leeds fan. I'm looking at the Championship going, jeez, there's no crack in there at all, because you've lost Aston Villa. Frank Lampard's gone from Derby, so who cares about them anymore?
with Philip Cocu and Wayne Rooney.
So you're kind of looking at it going, Jesus. And Sheffield United is a massive derby for Leeds as well, and they're gone. So you do need someone, like, you'd be up for a Sunderland game or an Ipswich Town. Like, that always just draws a bit of interest.
But how did the Sunderland documentary colour your experience of watching Sunderland as a football fan?
Like,
did you enjoy Sunderland more when they were successful, the Roy Keane area or going down to Championship, or did you enjoy them more as a football fan when they were in misery and producing documentaries like that? Like, in a sense, you hope you hope that's prolonged. Like, you want the more.
But you get to know all those fans in the documentary as well, and you don't want them bloody going down to League Two or something like that, you know.
Yeah, I think the Rise.
I feel sorry for them. Yeah. They're good football fans.
I liked that documentary. I obviously love that documentary. That story is an incredible story, but I think it needs the happy ending. It needs the second series where it's Sunderland rising from the ashes.
I don't know. I'm a big Last Chance U fan, American NFL college football series as well. And as I've learned from this season, it's a lot more enjoyable to watch a team lose than it is to watch a team win in terms of being good television. So I think I'm all for Sunderland to get relegated this year.
I have to say though, I surprised myself here. I'm hyped.
Yeah, I'm actually, to be honest, I was about to give out to you that you hadn't done a really good job of hyping this game up. And then we chat about it for a while, and now I'm all in on this game. Just in case you're wondering, 50-1 Sunderland are to get relegated this year. So.
That's not even the first 50-1 shot we've had on this pod so far.
And it actually perfectly leads us on to our final segment, which is called The Big Shout.
Right, hold it. Just hold it, Alan.
Push him out.
Steady, David, don't. Get round! No, don't! Bloody!
So the big shout is every week one of us is tasked with coming up with a ridiculous odds bet for the weekend. That's probably, but almost most definitely not going to come through. But we've got to try and explain our reasoning behind it. Now, Morris, you weren't asked about this. You weren't even informed beforehand that this thing was happening, but you've accidentally come out with one there where it's Sunderland to get relegated at 51. I'm counting that as one, and it's going to go on throughout the season. But
and if anybody wins one, you get a big cake.
I'll tell you.
Whatever your type you like. I'm going for Rocky Road. I've got that penciled in. Right. And I'm going to be getting it next week after my, because I'm tasked for the first episode with coming up with the big show.
And listeners can win maybe something better, maybe like a sports autobiography or something.
Two
like
cakes.
That. Two cakes, sorry, two cakes it is. If you want to win two cakes, send us in an email to gaffer@balls.ie or hit us up on Twitter or Instagram with your big shout, and we will provide prizes, because do you know what? If it's a big enough shout, you have to be at least. I think we need to have a cut off of 25-1. What do you think?
At least 20. Yeah, well, absolutely.
25-1. Yeah. Okay, anything under 25-1, you're not winning two cakes.
Yeah. So mine, I think I'm clear of the cut off point because it's actually almost 43-1. It's a treble for the weekend. I was feeling very patriotic. I went through yesterday, I did a post on site, you can actually check it out right now, which was all the match ratings for all the Irish players in the opening weekend of the championship. So did a bit of in-depth research on how analysis, the Irish lads got on. There were 16 lads in action overall across the championship weekend. Some of them did really well, one of them being James Collins. And he's in action for Luton Town against Cardiff this weekend. He's 21-10 to score any time. Cardiff lost their opening game of the season. Luton Town are loving life back in the championship. An incredible 3-3 draw with Middlesbrough in the opening game of
Robbie
the
Keane's Middlesbrough
season. Exactly, Robbie Keane's Middlesbrough. Sorry, didn't give them the full title.
Their full table. Yeah.
Robbie Keane and Darren Randolph's Middlesbrough. But James Collins, Luton Town. They're away from home all right, but score running time 21-10. Dan Crowley had a really impressive debut for Birmingham at the weekend. Didn't follow it up with a bad defeat to Portsmouth in the League Cup.
Ronan Curtis is Portsmouth
during the week.
Now, yeah, 3-0. So
there's two things that worry me with that, right? Or sorry, two things to take away from that. One that worries me and one that is maybe more enthusiastic about this selection, which I had made before I realised this had happened, is obviously they got beaten well by Portsmouth, so that's a worry. Dan Crowley, though, started up front. I don't know why. He was the lone striker, apparently. There was two strikers.
Well, not from what I saw on live score, there was 4-4-2.
Ah, well,
and he was one of them.
I saw a different formation and he was the only one, but either way, he was up front. Now, he did get taken off after 35 minutes, but that's because I think they were saving him for this weekend against Bristol City, the hapless Bristol City. Callum O'Dowd's Bristol City, who are well beaten by Leeds United at the weekend.
No, there's no Irish players at Leeds.
No, there's none. One of the only...
Ryan Nolan's Leeds.
I think the only two clubs I went through was it Leeds and Fulham, and now Harry Arthur... They're now Fulham and everybody named Harry Arthur's Fulham.
Harry Arthur's Fulham,
He's joined the brother-in-law, Scott Parker, at Fulham. But Dan Crowley was... At the weekend, he was very creative from midfield for Birmingham. I'm going to take a punt at him to score any time as well at 3-1. And lastly, Sheffield United... are opening up their Premier League season against Bournemouth.
Enda Stevens, Sheffield United.
Carl Robinson's, Enda Stevens, John Egan, and Dave McGoldrick, Sheffield United. Now, they have just signed your man McBurney from Swansea, which is a worry, because they also have Billy Sharp. And if somebody else,
Billy Sharp,
somebody else whose name I cannot quite remember right now, who could play up front as well. So I don't think Robinson and McGoldrick are going to start. For both of them are going to start for Sheffield United, if any of them, but I think Robinson probably will, or maybe they might start but not up front. But I'm going to take a punt on Robinson starting up front and Robertson scoring. Robinson scoring anytime
scoring
as
on
well.
Mark Travers Bournemouth.
At Mark Travers Bournemouth. Mark Travers Kilkenny and formerly Harry
Kilkenny, yeah.
Bournemouth. So he's 5-2 to score anytime against them. So that brings into a total of 42.5-1.
How much is Robinson? Sorry, 5-1.
He's 5-2.
Right, okay, so we're talking 43-1 here, Mark.
Yeah.
That's a big shout.
Big shout. Big shout by big shout by nature. What do you think, lads?
Oh,
it sounds about 43-1.
Yeah.
I would say that for three Ireland players to score on the weekend, in the one weekend, I would say he could have went about 3 months without three Ireland players scoring at some point last season. So this is one of the biggest shouts that we're ever going to have on this podcast, yeah. I think.
We've got a load of forwards all of a sudden is what's making me realise, because you got...
It's class.
Oh, with Femi and Long, we could have Parrott coming through, we could have Ida... Playing for Norwich this season. Shawnee, he scored a hat-trick in the under-23s the other day.
Shawnee Maguire's at home for Preston against Wigan. So there's every chance that he could get a goal there as well.
Scott
I was caught
Hogan's
between
after getting a move to Stoke, thank God for Villa fans. Yep. But like, hopefully that goes well for him.
So I'm changing my big shout to the Irish players between the top two divisions to score 7 goals at the weekend.
We'll take the first bet, Mark, because I couldn't be arsed doing the odds on the other one.
Let's do it. Right, lads. Have we suitably built up the sporting weekend? I think we have. I'm
we
very
are
excited.
Built up.
We are built up to we can build no more. But we are going to be back tomorrow with the Three Man Weave podcast that we said to preview this weekend's GAA games. We'll also be trying to guess the handicaps on that one.
Which we avoided somehow while looking up all these.
Well, Mick didn't, but myself and Morris did. So we're going to be going hell for leather against each other. But that is it from us here today. If this is your first time listening to Balls.ie podcast and you're not yet subscribed, please do. If you're already subscribed, please rate and review the show. Go into your Apple Podcast app or whatever app you're listening on. Scroll down to the bottom of the feed. You'll see where you can leave a 5-star review. And it would really make Morris's day, and Mick would be fairly happy too. But we will be back next week to look back at all the stuff we've just chatted about. And of course, preview another jam-packed weekend of sport. But until then, mind yourself.